What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hello and welcome to the Katie Halper Show. As you know, you can hear the Katie Halper Show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on WBAI. That's 99.5 FM or WBAI.org. You can also find us on SoundCloud and you can also find us on iTunes, where you please we implore you to rate and review us. We're getting great reviews and we would like some more. On today's show, I speak to Representative Ro Khanna, who represents California's 17th District. And I talk to him about Jeff Bezos of Amazon announcing that he will be raising the minimum wage for U.S. workers to $15 an hour. And this is in large part because of a bill that Ro Khanna introduced in the Congress and Bernie Sanders introduced to the Senate that was called the No Bezos Bill, which basically was pressuring Jeff Bezos to pay his workers better. And I speak to none other than Nathan Robinson, who is the editor of the excellent magazine Current Affairs. And Nathan speaks to me about an article that he wrote that's gone very viral for good reason, called How We Know Kavanaugh is Lying. Make sure you go to patreon.com/the Katie Halper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/the Katie Halper Show to become Patreon bonus subscribers. I am speaking with Congressman Ro Khanna, the Democrat representing California's 17th District. And you may have heard that on Tuesday, CEO Jeff Bezos announced that Amazon would be raising its U.S. minimum wage to $15 an hour. And that was in large part thanks to a bill that Representative Khanna introduced. And so he's going to be talking about that. Pretty big deal. Just happened on Tuesday. Just reading from the New York Times, it says that Amazon has agreed to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour for its U.S. employees. And the raises apply for part-time workers and those hired through temporary agencies. The company said it would also lobby Washington to raise federal minimum wage. And the new wages will apply to more than 250,000 Amazon employees, including those at the grocery chain Whole Foods, as well as more than 100,000 seasonal employees it plans to hire for the holiday season. And it will go into effect November 1st, and the changes will not apply to contract workers. Do we have Representative Khanna online? Oh, great. Hello.
How are you?
Good. You?
Good. Good.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, it was a major victory for almost 350,000 workers getting $15 an hour and hopefully setting the standard for the industry. Bernie and I introduced this about a month ago, the Bezos Act.
The issue we're talking about today is, I think, an issue that deals with the great economic crisis in America today. And that is, despite low unemployment, we end up having tens of millions of Americans working at wages that are just so low that they can't adequately take care of their families. And today we have three people in America, the three wealthiest people, who own more wealth than the bottom 50%. And we have the absurd situation that 52% of all new income is going to the top 1%. And I think it is fair to say that the American people are tired of having to subsidize the wealthiest people in this country who are paying wages that are just so low that people can't get by. Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, is the wealthiest person on earth. I think, as I understand it, his wealth went up by $2 billion yesterday. Amazon had a good day. And he's worth about $168 billion. Not bad. Since the beginning of this year, his wealth has increased by about $260 million every single day. Congressman Connor and I are proposing legislation that would have Mr. Bezos, the Walton family of Walmart, and other billionaires get off of welfare and start paying their workers a living wage. Specifically, this bill would establish a 100% tax on corporations with 500 or more employees, equal to the amount of federal benefits received by their low-wage workers. In other words, the taxpayers of this country would no longer be subsidizing the wealthiest people in this country who are paying their workers inadequate wages. And I think the point that Congressman Connor and I are making is that Bezos could play a profound role, not only in Amazon, but as one of the largest corporations in America. If he said today that nobody who is employed at Amazon will receive less than a living wage, this would not only improve lives for thousands of people at Amazon, it would send the message to every corporation in America that that's where we should be going as a nation.
On Tuesday, Amazon's CEO, Jeff Bezos, said, "We listened to our critics, thought hard about what we wanted, and decided we want to lead. We're excited about this change and encourage our competitors and other large employers to join us." So you were one of those critics.
And with that, let me introduce Representative O'Connor of California. Ro?
This bill will incentivize companies to pay the wage that workers deserve. Those workers will be able to buy things. That's what's going to grow our economy. That's what always has.
You know, when Bernie and I introduced this about a month ago, we were totally discredited by the Beltway and the pundits, and they said the bill wouldn't work and right. The economics didn't work. But I'm glad Jeff Bezos listened, and today there's thousands of workers are going to get $15.
Yeah.
I have been calling on Amazon to raise their wages to $15. I even cited at the press conference when Senator Sanders and I rolled out the Bezos Act, I cited Henry Ford's model. And I said to Mr. Bezos, look at what Henry Ford did. In 1914, he doubled wages. He became one of the most popular people in the United States. And there's no reason that a company that is the richest in the world, a $1 trillion market cap, can't pay its employees $15. So I'm glad that Mr. Bezos listened. But I want to be clear, it wasn't just Senator Sanders and me. I mean, right. Senator Sanders deserves the most credit, but it was a lot of the workers who
right.
had the courage to tell their stories. And Senator Sanders' office and Warren Gunnell and some of the others started to collect stories. They literally asked Amazon employees to start sharing their stories on social media or with the Senator Sanders' office. And there were journalists that covered that. And their courage and the fight for 15, I think, deserve the most credit.
I just want to take this opportunity to thank the many hundreds of workers at Amazon fulfillment centers all across this country who contacted our office, who emailed us, who helped us with videos.
One of the people that trained me when I came in, he's homeless.
I know people who live in their car.
It's crazy that I work for the richest man in the world, and yet I'm living check to check.
I did work many days that were 15, 16 hours, and I had that mini stroke after 1 year.
After taxes, you take home $280 a week. $280 a week in Phoenix, Arizona is not enough money to survive on.
It's kind of hard to talk about, but there was a point where I would find myself crying on my shift, and I would hide so people didn't see me.
The first reaction to Amazon was defensive,
right.
saying that the Amazon employees weren't speaking for the
larger companies experience.
Amazon taking on Senator Bernie Sanders, the e-commerce giant responding in a rare blog post to the senator's repeated claims of poor working conditions at Amazon fulfillment centers. Amazon calling the claims, quote, inaccurate, misleading.
But it turned out that they got so many stories that this really made a difference.
So they couldn't pretend it was an anomaly because too many people were responding.
Too many people responded, and then I think they didn't anticipate how much attention the Bezos Act would get. The irony is I think it got criticized so much by some of the Beltway economists, but that in itself made it a story. And so every story then talked about the Amazon work condition. So I think the combination of Bezos' company hitting a $1 trillion market cap, workers sharing their stories, the negative attention of the bill, all led to him reconsidering the decision, and I think he deserves credit for what he's done.
Yeah, thank God for your haters and critics giving you all that free press on your important
Yeah, no, I agree. It worked out.
Yeah. How did you and Senator Sanders think of it? How did you come up with the way you wanted to approach this massive wealth inequality? Because there are a couple ways you could do it, right? A couple different policies.
Both Senator Sanders and I believe strongly in a $15 minimum wage and legislation for that that has been introduced in the Congress. But we wanted to go at it a different way. We wanted to say that, look, these big billionaires and corporations are basically getting corporate welfare, that they are making obscene amounts of profits, becoming $1 trillion companies, yet paying such low wages, taxpayers are stuck with the bill. And there's really no excuse that taxpayers should be paying for the food stamps of Amazon employees, that Amazon employees, the employees at the richest company of the world, in the world, can't be paid a decent enough wage to not have to rely on public benefits. And this argument resonated, actually, not just among Democrats, but even among Republicans, saying, yeah, why shouldn't workers at these billion-dollar companies be paid a reasonable wage? Why are taxpayers being stuck with the bill? Now, the criticism we received is, well, would this incentivize Amazon to discriminate and not hire or fire people who had kids or people who had public benefits? And we had very strong anti-discrimination provisions in the bill and strong penalties. But the bigger point is that we knew that highlighting the discrepancy of Amazon making so much money and then taxpayers being stuck with the burden of their employees would generate populist anger, frustration at Amazon, and hopefully bring a change.
Right. I think that something that people really are still in denial about is how much outrage and also a positive program for moving forward, but also outrage and a moral framing of politics, how galvanizing that is. And there really is this conventional wisdom that I think is so reluctant to acknowledge how much people like you and Sanders and, you know, the Fight for 15 movement, how you guys are really challenging the norm and what's acceptable and shifting the Overton window. And there's, you know, people love dismissing things as utopian or just as a great idea in theory, but impossible to do in practice. And I'm wondering when people are going to finally realize that you don't get the change without demanding it.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, I completely agree with you. I have to put forward bold ideas. The Republicans aren't afraid of putting forth bold ideas. I mean, they have rammed through a $1.6 trillion tax cut. They're trying to ram through a judge who's been has allegations, four different credible allegations of sexual assault. And they have their principles, as wrong and terrible as they may be, and they fight for them. We're not going to beat that with sort of wishy-washy incrementalism.
Right.
We need to have our principles, and we need to fight for them. And part of that is putting forward the policies we think make sense. And when we do that, we achieve results. You know, it's common sense to most people that if you work at the world's richest company, a $1 trillion company, you should be able to make enough to afford food. You should be able to make enough not to rely on public benefits. That's a common sense idea. Now, when we introduced this bill, people said, well, don't call it the Bezos Act. Don't make Amazon the enemy.
Right.
Don't single them out. But sometimes it's important to single out companies that aren't living up to their standards. And Bezos, to his credit, didn't take it personally. It affected positive change. So we shouldn't be afraid of the fight.
Right. Also, people respond to stories, right? And to symbolism. It's hard to get that excited about something with a really wonky title.
You're absolutely right. In fact, this is Senator Sanders' brilliance. I had introduced a version of this bill about a year ago called the Corporate Tax Responsibility Act. And Senator Sanders' office called and said, we're going to introduce this together, and we're going to call it the Bezos Act, and we're going to do it on the day that Amazon hits $1 trillion
wow.
market value. And I think it's sometimes people underestimate Senator Sanders' ability to tell a story and capture people's imagination and how important that is, especially in the age of Trump.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I couldn't agree more. And it's such that's the way you counteract Trump's right-wing populism and like sound bites is through, I think, in large part, effective storytelling. The difference is it's actually true, right? It's not a small difference.
It's true. Exactly. It's true. It speaks to real people's concerns.
Exactly.
And it's reasonable. I mean, when Jeff Bezos raised wages to $15, Senator Sanders was the first to congratulate him.
Right.
So it's done with a bold aspiration, but then something that's for the sake of justice, something everyone can relate to, and that is outcome-based. I mean, the president's just vindictive and divisive for its own sake.
Right. And so it's the Stop Bad Employers by Zeroing Out Subsidies Act. That's what stands for Bezos. I have this vision of people in a room, like, brainstorming. And I hear Sanders, zeroing out. That's what we'll go with, zeroing out.
Well, maybe, you know, I don't know how much Senator Sanders, I'm sure he said he had the idea of having it be named after Bezos. And Warren Gunnell there in his office, and Ari and Josh, he has some brilliant people working for him. And I'm sure they had a role in helping craft the legislation.
What is the status of the act right now?
Well, we have 10 co-sponsors. I don't know if Senator Sanders has any in the Senate, but I'm hoping that the success of this will get more people to sponsor it. You know, the problem was as soon as we came out with this bill, we had all these quote-unquote Democratic think tanks, and I don't want to list them, criticize the bill. And it shocked me. I mean, we were getting attacked from think tanks in our own party saying that this wasn't smart economics and this wasn't going to make a difference. And, you know, I defended it, and it was a reasonable back and forth. I'm not saying the economists didn't have good points, but they were getting into the finer points, and it was a genuine debate. But they were missing the broader picture, which is there's something wrong with billion-dollar companies don't pay their employees enough, and taxpayers are stuck with the bill. And so they were so in the weeds, debating back and forth, that they scared, I think, a number of members, you know, who don't want to be on the wrong side of these think tanks.
Right.
Now I'm hoping with the result that more people will get on the bill.
What are we talking, like Brookings? Want to name some names?
Well, you know, the Center of Budget Priorities, there were a couple others. And some, you know, some of them I have respect for people there that done work with them, but for some reason this bill struck a nerve with, the Center of Budget Priorities issued a 6-page analysis attacking the bill, which is so rare because usually you do that for, you know, the health care debate or the tax bill, but for a bill like this that hasn't even gone through committee to do that really touched a nerve. And I think it's because, you know, it's going directly at corporate power and an inequity. But representing Silicon Valley, I say this to tech leaders all the time. I say, people don't begrudge you your entrepreneurship, your innovation, even your economic success. But what they begrudge is when others don't have a stake in it. So when you're paying below $15 a wages and making billions of dollars, there's a problem. It's in your own interest to pay employees well,
to pay contractors well, to allow unionization, to let everyone have a stake in the digital economy.
Right. I wanted to also ask you about Brett Kavanaugh. And I remember actually when I had you on last time, we talked about the Khalil Amar op-ed in the Times, which argued that the nomination of Kavanaugh was Trump's classiest act. And you are yourself a Yale Law graduate.
I try to keep that on the down low these days.
Well, honestly, it's fine because Brett Kavanaugh says it about 13 times per minute, I feel like.
Got into Yale College. When I got into Yale College, got into Yale Law School.
So maybe it needs to balance out. So you have to mention it less. So there's space in the universe for that. But I have to admit, I knew that Kavanaugh was really bad. But watching those hearings, I mean, I feel like if I were a Republican, even if I were a Lindsey Graham, I would be humiliated by his behavior. Like, even if I liked his policies, and even if I believed him in with the sexual assault, and I want to be clear, I don't, and I also think he has terrible politics. His behavior was so, what's the word? Like, he was throwing a tantrum. I couldn't believe it when they asked him things about himself, and he would say, like, I like beer. What do you like to drink? What do you like? Yeah.
It was contemptuous. You know, for a person who went up there and said he wants to be an umpire and called balls and strikes without any bias, you know, he went there and acted as a total partisan. Now, it's one thing, as terrible and revolting as it is, for Donald Trump to throw tantrums.
I agree,
And say, okay, I'm running for president, and if people vote for him. But when you're seeking a judgeship, I mean, Kavanaugh is not running for Congress.
Right.
He's not for the Senate. He's not running against Klobuchar.
Right.
You're seeking a judgeship, you have to have the humility to respect the democratic process, because when he insults Amy Klobuchar, he's insulting the state of Minnesota. When he insults, you know, Dianne Feinstein, he's insulting the state of California. He's insulting the democratic process. And that's what's shocking to me about no Republican willing to speak out, because it's the Republicans who really have this mythical view of the judge as impartial and the judge is not a policymaker.
Right.
And Kavanaugh just put that whole thing to rest. In fact, I was telling a friend, I think secretly, the person who least probably wants Kavanaugh on the court is John Roberts. Because John Roberts, even though I disagree with him on many things, is a person who cares about legacy and is an institutionalist. And I'm sure he realizes that Kavanaugh coming on that court will just totally destroy any credibility the Supreme Court has.
Right. But I think that Republicans, I mean, don't really care about that.
They don't.
Yeah.
They don't. They're motivated by politics. I mean,
right.
I saw a poll recently, scary, that shows that the enthusiasm gap between Democrats and Republicans is closing in the midterms. And this is mobilizing their base. And I think they're driven largely by political considerations.
Yeah, of course. I mean, but how is there any chance? Do you think there's any chance that the confirmation could be blocked?
I do. I mean, I know Flake, you know, he comes out with a different statement every day.
Right. Yeah. If he's retiring, why can't he just do the right thing?
I don't know. I mean, I give him credit for who's delaying the process.
Yeah.
And I give the two women in the elevator who protested.
Oh my God, that was amazing. Yeah.
On Monday, I stood in front of your office with Addie Barkin. I told the story of my sexual assault. I told it because I recognized in Dr. Ford's story that she's telling the truth. What you are doing is allowing someone who actually violated a woman to sit in the Supreme Court. This is not tolerable. You have children in your family. Think about them. I have two children. I cannot imagine that for the next 50 years, they will have to have someone in the Supreme Court who has been accused of violating a young girl. What are you doing, sir?
I was sexually assaulted and nobody believed me. I didn't tell anyone, and you're telling all women that they don't matter, that they should just stay quiet, because if they tell you what happened to them, you're going to ignore them. That's what happened to me, and that's what you're telling all women in America, that they don't matter. They should just keep it to themselves, because if they have told the truth, you're just going to help that man to power anyway. That's what you're telling all of these women. That's what you're telling me right now. Look at me when I'm talking to you. You're telling me that my assault doesn't matter. That what happened to me doesn't matter. And that you're going to let people who do these things into power. That's what you're telling me when you vote for him. Don't look away from me. Look at me and tell me that it doesn't matter what happened to me. That you'll let people like that go into the highest court of the land and tell everyone what they can do to their bodies.
Senator Flake, do you think that Brett Kavanaugh is telling the truth?
Thank you.
Do you think that he's able to hold the pain of this country and repair it? That is the work of justice. The way that justice works is you recognize harm, you take responsibility for it, and then you begin to repair it. You're allowing someone who is unwilling to take responsibility for his own actions, unwilling to hold the harm that he has done to one woman, actually three women, and repair it. You are allowing someone who is unwilling to take responsibility for his own actions
respond
to sit in the higher court of the country and to have the role of repairing the harm that has been done in this country to many people. No, thank you. What do you think?
Senator, do you care to respond?
Ma'am, do you want to talk to the staff?
No, I want to talk to him. Don't talk to me. What do you think? I understand, but tell me, I'm standing right here in front of you. What do you have to, do you think that he's telling the truth? Do you think that he's telling the truth to the country?
Can you not give them an answer?
We have our press available to talk to you guys if you want.
You got an answer there.
Give them an answer.
Okay, thank you.
Had a response.
No, you can either come in or out. Thank you.
Saying thank you is not an answer. This is about the future of our country, sir.
So I don't know. I mean, I think there is a chance. I mean, when Donald Trump goes and does rallies insulting Christine Ford,
yeah,
I think that helps the chances of getting some of these quote-unquote moderate senators to flip. So I think it could go either way. I think we have to fight it out and hope that Flake or Collins or Murkowski will have a moment of doing what's right for the nation.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a lot scarier to have, first of all, it's a lifetime appointment, right, when you're on the Supreme Court. But also, it is like, I do have a different expectation of Supreme Court justices. Like, they are supposed to be real intellectuals and rational thinkers. And, I mean, Donald Trump is a disturbing president, obviously. But it is, in some ways, actually scarier to see that kind of emotionally unregulated and incontinent behavior from someone who's going to be a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah. I mean, look, Donald Trump is not going to be there for 40 years.
Yeah, exactly.
May. And, and Donald Trump isn't being charged for being a jurist.
Right.
Here is what I don't understand about the whole Kavanaugh thing, because people keep talking about due process and give him the benefit of the doubt and his innocence. Now, I believe Christine Ford, and I believe some of the other allegations.
Yeah.
But put that aside.
Right.
No one is talking here about putting Kavanaugh in jail. No one is even talking about a civil suit where he would have to pay a penalty or a fine
right
to Dr. Ford.
Right.
What we're saying, what is the consequence of not confirming him? That he gets to be on the second highest court
exactly
in the land,
right,
not the highest court.
Right.
Right, so
ruining his life. How could you deprive him of his life and liberty?
You know, so much sympathy here.
Oh my God, no, no, no. I don't feel
you
that
know,
at
so
all.
I think that's where I thought it almost heightened his sense of privilege.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And he was feeling this, almost trying to play the victim.
Yeah.
Here he's had a lot of privilege, and that's not a terrible thing. Look, there are people who've had privileged lives who've done great things
right
for humanity, like Franklin Roosevelt,
yeah, exactly,
but they develop the ability to have introspection and empathy, and that's what was totally missing.
Yeah, it's one thing to have privilege, it's another thing to totally abuse it, be entitled and disrespectful. I mean, he reminds me of those like Willy Wonka characters, like the kids who want a lot of candy and throw tantrums. Veruca Salt.
I want a golden goose! Gooses! Geeses! I want my geese to lay gold eggs for Easter.
Call her the blueberry girl or whatever. Given good manners, you will go far. Oh, Lindsey Graham, I assume you saw him stage his great Oscar-worthy performance.
But let me tell you, when it comes to this, you're looking for a fair process? You came to the wrong town at the wrong time, my friend. If you wanted an FBI investigation, you could have come to us. What you want to do is destroy this guy's life, hold this seat open, and hope you win in 2020. You've said that, not me. You've got nothing to apologize for. When you see Sotomayor and Kagan, tell them that Lindsey said hello, because I voted for them. I would never do to them what you've done to this guy. This is the most unethical sham since I've been in politics. And if you really wanted to know the truth, you sure as hell wouldn't have done what you've done to this guy.
Where, by the way, he said basically the same thing that he did with Alito. He just takes whatever the nominee is being accused of and asks it in the form of a rhetorical question. So with Alito, he goes, are you some kind of closet bigot?
Are you really a closet bigot?
And then Alito gets to say no.
I'm not any kind of a bigot.
No, sir, you're not.
And with Kavanaugh, he goes, are you a gang rapist? And he gets to say no.
Are you a gang rapist?
No.
Oh, did you see him trying to feed him his lines? He was like, is this a job interview?
Do you consider this a job interview?
And Kavanaugh was like,
the advice and consent role is like a job
interview. You consider that you've been through a job interview?
I've been through a process of advice and consent under the Constitution.
Would you say you've been through hell?
I've been through hell and then some.
This is not a job interview.
Yeah.
This is hell.
It was like watching the showbiz mom, like, coach a child actor.
Lindsey Graham has a flair for theatrics. It's unfortunate that his judgment has been so awful. I mean, I don't know what could be worse, the fact that Lindsey Graham got us into Iraq and wants to get us into Iran and the thousands of human lives we've lost because of his foreign policy judgments or his theatrics on Kavanaugh. But
he's well-rounded, yeah, I'll give him that. He's versatile. Yeah.
You know, he's angling to be attorney general in the Trump administration.
Right. And
there's this is just pure politics. He wants to appeal to the base of the party.
But can't the Democrats be a little bit more like, not Grahamian, in terms of the killing a lot of people and being a total hawk? But, I mean, there could be more theater from the Dems and more criticism of Kavanaugh. I feel like it's a little bit tame.
You think so? I mean, I thought that some of the people on the Senate committee did a good job, but how would you?
I don't know. Can't they shift the conversation so that it's not even about confirmation? It's whether he goes to jail or not.
No. I mean, you could. I mean, at least a call. But they did call for investigations the Montgomery Police Department. I mean, I think it's for Democrats. It's just shocking.
Right.
That this is still moving forward. I mean, just think of it as common sense. I mean, I wouldn't hire someone who has this background, half this background.
Right.
I would say, give me a break. Why would I hire someone? I'm not going to go through. Now, if I didn't hire someone and this was in their background, people wouldn't say that depriving them of
right,
the due process.
Right.
So why can't the American public have the same sense?
Right.
You know, why should we, on the highest court of the land, have someone who has doubt and would bring doubt to the institution. I think, though, this has just become so partisan. You know, Peter Beinart had a great article in The Atlantic where he pointed out that it was almost as if the worse the accusations against Kavanaugh became, the more the Republicans doubled down in the defense of Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
And he says that this is just going at their core of empowering women's rights and
and going at privilege. And it's the one thing that has unified the Republican Party. You know, now you have a George W. Bush calling senators lobbying for Kavanaugh,
right?
Because so the elites of the Republican Party are unified with the Donald Trumps of the Republican Party to protect the privilege, and they feel that privilege is under attack, and that's why they're doubling down.
Right, and it's an important reminder for people because some people like to overly rehabilitate all Republicans who aren't Trump, including George Bush. But yes,
I mean, I was very disappointed, though not shocked. I mean, George W. Bush has been lobbying very, very hard for Kavanaugh, calling, working the phones, calling the senators. So this has really united the Republican Party, and it's an important point to be made because it's not just the Trump wing of the party. This is the entire party.
Yeah, I think it's one of the most dangerous narratives. There are a couple of dangerous responses, takeaways from the Trump victory, but I think that one of them is that that he's a real fringe and he has an ideology that's very different from other people. Really, he just says a lot of the things that most Republicans think. There's no difference between him and like Paul Ryan.
Look, he's polling at 90% amongst Republicans.
Right, exactly, right.
There's not a single Republican who's willing to contradict him on anything meaningful. So he's obviously speaking for the base of the party and the voters of the party.
Right. Yeah, so I think that's one of the myths is that he's like a real anomaly. And I do think that there is an interesting thing where he's both unprecedented and a continuation at the same time. And I think that's true with Kavanaugh, too, because his ideas aren't that different from other conservative judges. But what's very different is, first of all, the accusations and also his decorum. But I guess as atrocious as he is, and he is worse in many ways, but I don't want people to, you know, some people I think are normalizing other, like Thomas and Alito.
His jurisprudence is equally bad.
Right.
I think the difference here is his character, which is obviously worse, and his temperament, which at least the others would, maybe they're partisan deep down, but they cloak it in, and have the pretense of being objective. Here there is no even pretense of objectivity.
Right. Yeah, it would be. Sometimes I'm like, oh, great, it's refreshing. It's finally exposing the Republicans for what they are. But then the sad thing is they poll well, so it doesn't even help us.
I think the only hope is that our turnout will be even larger. I mean, this is a losing issue for them when you look to the total population. But when you look to midterms, it's all about turnout. And what this has done is gotten more of their base willing to vote.
Right.
And so the way to counter that is to have young people and those people who are single, people who are quote-unquote less likely statistically to vote, to show up and vote.
Yeah, single and ready to mingle. So we could have singles parties or something. I don't know, speed dating at polling places. And any advice on how Dems can really excite the base? Because, you know, I do think that one of the great things about having people like you and Sanders talk about economics is I remember there was this is on Twitter, and Twitter is just a reflection, though, I think, often of a certain kind of national discussion. But people were upset that Sanders was holding a town hall on Amazon when there was stuff happening in Russia. And to me, that kind of was like a peak denial that exists among some Democrats, where they think the solution to getting the vote out is talking about Russia. And regardless of how important you think Russia is and how much of a role it played, people don't come out, don't leave their house to vote around Russia, and they do around jobs.
I think the key message has to be economic.
Yeah.
And by economic, it has to be simple.
Yeah.
What are we going to do to make people's lives better who haven't been making enough and are struggling to pay the bills and who are seeing all these other people do really well in their country.
Yeah.
You know, Donald Trump spoke to them. He said, I'm going to stop immigrants and I'm going to stop
and I'm going to beat up on China and these foreign countries.
Right.
It was a nativist message. It was a xenophobic message, but it was a message.
Right.
We had a very clear message. So we've got to have a more honest message,
right.
But we've got to have a message for them about
exactly.
What is it going to mean for their lives. And a lot of these other things, I mean, as important as even the Supreme Court is, and
right.
It's deeply, deeply, deeply important.
Right.
It's not going to impact
right.
people directly in the way some of the economic issues
right.
are. So we have
or at
to
least
be
immediately,
versatile.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it will. I mean, look, Kavanaugh is going to be
so scary.
Terrible for working
right.
families in the long run in terms of all the decisions on workers' rights
right.
and collective
unions,
bargaining. So
right.
we have to focus on it. But it can't be at the expense of an economic
right.
agenda.
And because that's what people are constantly thinking about. I mean, it's there's questions. A lot of things affect people, but the issue is also what resonates with people.
And it doesn't have to be either or.
Right.
But we have to. But we have to have a simple, bold economic message in
right.
addition to these other very important issues.
It has to be an equal but opposite messaging from Trump's, which is what you guys are doing, as opposed to the moderate messaging that is like nondescript, no one remembers, and just doesn't defeat right-wing populism. Well, thank you so much, Representative Connor, for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you. I love the show. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and we'll have you on again soon.
Great.
Whenever you can squeeze us in.
And to hear the rest of our conversation with Ro Khanna, where he talks to me about Yemen, please go to patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow.
We have Nathan Robinson on the line.
Hello. Hello, Katie.
Hello. And Nathan is the editor of Current Affairs. Can you tell people why they should subscribe to Current Affairs?
It's a beautiful print magazine loaded with insightful analysis from a left perspective, full of, we add a lot of satirical advertisements and puzzles and games and little fun things. We try and make the experience of reading it actually enjoyable rather than tedious.
Yes.
So it's very colorful, full of original art and original writing, and no one who subscribes ever regrets it.
There you go. It's kind of like the Katie Halper Show in written form,
mm-hmm.
a mix of satire
Absolutely.
And seriousness. Yes. And yeah, it's a great independent media source, and it's very smart and it's very engaging. And Nathan wrote a piece that has gone very viral for good mm-hmm. reason. And that piece is called How We Know Kavanaugh is Lying. And he also made a video. How did you come up with this piece? Like, you detail, how many words is it?
It's about 11,000.
Give or take. But who's counting? So 11,000 words. Were you watching the confirmation hearings and tallying the lies? And how many did you find?
I lost count eventually
right.
of the number of
you don't have enough
especially
digits.
If you count things that are just evasions or misdirection
right.
or refusals to answer the question.
Right.
I tried not to watch the testimony actually, but then I started reading it afterwards.
Right.
And I was just, things stuck out to me really obviously as just plain deception. And I was a little disappointed with the quality of the analysis that was being produced when it was so obvious that he just said things that were just, I mean, there's no other word for it than lies.
Right.
So then I started combing through the testimony and I sort of went, my goodness, there's so much here that he just misstated completely
right.
or where he tried to draw people's attention away from the truth or where he just painted a totally misleading portrait of himself.
Yeah, I don't know why people aren't emphasizing more the fact that forget what his jurisprudence theory is, and even forgetting the accusation, although we shouldn't obviously, but like
no.
he just by the very fact that he's already disqualified himself by lying under oath, he's lied during this confirmation hearings, as you document.
Well, yeah, I mean, lying to the Senate is actually pretty serious, right?
Right.
I mean, it comes with up to five years in federal prison.
Right.
It's a really serious offense. People have been prosecuted for it. You know, Roger Clemens was prosecuted for lying to Congress about baseball.
Right.
Right? And this is a federal judge who wants to be on the Supreme Court. I mean, I think what we should be really talking about is, impeachment. Not,
right.
not should he be confirmed to the Supreme Court, but how do we remove this guy from office?
Yeah. Life in prison or just impeachment? That's my question.
Yeah, it's up to 5 years. Five, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't know, actually, because I don't know if you know this, but he went to Yale, which is his response to everything, I think.
Did he mention that?
Yeah, he may have mentioned it once or twice, yeah.
Once or twice, go to Yale.
He's also Catholic. He goes to church. It reminds me of when Sarah Palin used to do this. She was asked questions, she just wouldn't respond to them, which I imagined that I had a fantasy. It was just an absurdist thing, but, you know, I was pretended that she was being Virginia Woolfian, stream of consciousness, challenging the patriarchal linear narrative. Yeah, that's definitely it. So what are the worst lies, would you say? Because one of the things he keeps saying is that all the other people at the party said it didn't happen. And as you've pointed out and others have pointed out, that is a lie, but it's kind of like it's totally dishonest, because what they're saying is that they don't remember it. And as you point out, one of the witnesses, one of the people who Ford says was there, says that she believes Ford. But he's basically turning "we don't remember it" into "it didn't happen." But that's that pales in comparison in some ways to the other lies.
Well, I think it is very important because it is a much stronger statement to say, like, she named these people and then we asked these people and they said it did not happen.
Right, which is very different from not remembering.
Because things that suggest that there's no way it could have happened, but not remembering a tiny gathering you went to in high school, that actually is very consistent with it having happened.
Right.
And, you know, and it's just the opposite of the truth to say that Ford's friend said it didn't happen when she says she thinks it did.
Yeah, exactly,
So that's humongously important, and he knows. That's the thing. He's a judge. He knows this distinction, and he's doing it deliberately. He's not an idiot. That's what you have to remember.
He comes across as one, but no, he's obviously not.
But then there are things like the calendar, right?
Oh, my gosh,
He says, this is just egregious. He says, look at my calendars. I meticulously kept calendars, and I was never at an event with this group of people Ford names. And then he proceeds to name some other groups of people that he used to go to events with. And, you know, if you look at the group of people Ford names, she names him, his friend Mark Judge, a boy named PJ, and some other boy. Well, then you look at the calendar, and there's an event, Thursday, July 1st, where he goes for beers to somebody's house with those boys.
Right.
And he said he didn't, but he did.
So,
it's on his calendar.
Can't they just kick him? Can't they throw him out based on that alone?
Yes. You can't. Yeah, and the thing is that not only did he do that, but he tried to draw people's attention away from that event by saying, well, if I'd had drinks with someone, it would have been on the weekend because we had summer jobs. And I was away during the weekends. Well, that event where he went to when he went out with the boys, that occurred on a weekday. So he was like, don't look at the weekdays, just look at the weekends. And that's so deceptive and so obviously deceptive. And I don't think you can trust a word he says after that.
Right. What could the Democrats do, do you think? What could people do?
I think the first thing the Democrats need to do is start framing the issue really well, because their questioning was often very frustrating in the hearing.
Yeah.
Because it was all about, you know, would you submit to an investigation and how, you know, when did you first? And instead of just nailing him on some of this stuff and not letting it go, not moving on, and just start saying, I mean, because I think it's very hard for even people on the right to mount any kind of argument for, number one, how some of these things are not just false, because they are clearly just false, and number two, how any judge who says false things to the Senate that actually are material to the issues around his confirmation can possibly serve as a judge. And if you raise those two challenges, I think it becomes very hard for anyone to defend it.
Yeah. So you listening, Democrats? Please take that into account. You have tons of evidence. And yeah, as you pointed out, if you look at July 1 in his weird pathological calendar, which he keeps because his dad does too, which sounds like some form of abuse. He talks about, he waxes poetic. He loves distraction. He cries. He does. He gets indignant. He's talked about how his dad used to regale the family with stories from his calendar journal, which really does sound like abuse. But he wrote Tobin's House Workout. Go to Jimmy's for skis, which is probably Bruce, which is they.
Well, he was asked if it was Brewskis, and he didn't deny it.
Right.
He just answered a different question that was in his head.
With Judge Tom PJ Bernie Cyrus or something.
Squee.
Oh, Squee. Right. Squee. And PJ and Judge are two of the people who Christine Ford said he was with. Right. And
exactly.
He says he, so right there, he should be thrown out.
She was a bad egg.
Let's toss him out.
That's it.
Where all the other bad eggs go? Down the garbage chute. To the furnace.
And there's tons more, though. I mean, as I say, I got to 11,000 words, 20-something, evasions or lies, and then I just read out. There's more that I haven't even added.
Right.
I mean,
well, what are some other ones? Let's see. He talks about which ones stand out for you?
So there's a lot of stuff around the alcohol.
Yeah. Oh, my God. No, he just has a weak stomach, Nathan.
Yeah. You know, he really tried to down... You know, he said, I liked beer in high school. You know, I did like to drink some beer. But he was asked basically, over and over about the very strong evidence that it was more than just liking beer like people like beer, but that he was, quite a belligerent and aggressive drunk.
Right.
That's an
understatement.
And all of those questions he misled the Senate on. When he was asked why he was listed as being part of the Beach Week Ralphing Club in his yearbook, and he goes, it's because I can't handle spicy food.
Right.
And that's nonsense. It's not because it's because he drank a lot and threw up a lot. We even now have a letter in his own handwriting where he says, we're obnoxious drunks and prolific pukers.
Yeah. Sounds lovely.
If you say it's because of your sensitive stomach and it isn't because of your sensitive stomach, then you're lying, right? There's no way around that. He was asked, have you ever... I mean, people dwell on the blackout thing. He was asked if he blacked out, and he said no, and there was one of his Yale classmates said that's not realistic.
Right.
But he was also asked, have you ever even woken up with your clothes in a different condition to how you remember when you fell asleep? And he said, no, never.
Right.
And... it's just totally implausible. I mean, people say that... I mean, we have so much testimony from people who knew his drinking habits. In the yearbook, they said they were going to try and get through 100 kegs in a year.
Right.
And Mark Judge said they actually did it.
Wow. Well, that's one of the... That's an accomplishment, at least, that I can congratulate him on. Well, Nathan, thank you so much for talking to us, and I'm going to talk with you more, and I'll post that. And where can people find you and Current Affairs online?
CurrentAffairs.org. Go there and subscribe.
Great.
Thanks so much for listening to The Katie Halper Show. Don't forget to become Patreon members at patreon.com/TheKatieHalperShow. Again, that's patreon.com/TheKatieHalperShow. Ro Khanna represents California's 17th Congressional District. He's also a graduate of Yale Law School, but don't tell anyone. He's one of only 6 members of the House of Representatives and 10 total members of Congress who do not take campaign contributions from political action committees or PACs or corporations. Nathan Robinson is the editor of the excellent magazine Current Affairs, which you can find at currentaffairs.org. He wrote an article that's gone very viral called How We Know Kavanaugh is Lying. You can hear the Katie Halper Show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on WBAI, that's 99.5 FM, or WBAI.org. You can also find us on SoundCloud, and you can also find us on iTunes. Please rate and review us. See you next week.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Ka'Chava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans. Quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Whether you're craving that coffee taste to kickstart your morning ritual or as a nutrient-packed reward to round out your afternoon, Ka'Chava keeps you fueled and satisfied wherever your day takes you. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. And for the times you feel like switching it up, you've got 7 flavors to choose from, all with the highest quality ingredients. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to ka'chava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code FITNESS.